Thriving, Not Surviving, with your host, Gina Gardner. To lead others, you first need to be the best version of yourself and lead from a place of wholeness. Motivation, empowerment, leadership, personal and spiritual development are just a few of the topics you will hear on Thriving, Not Surviving. So sit back and enjoy the show with your host, Gina Gardner.
Hello there, and welcome to today's show. And I'm really, really thrilled to introduce my guest to you, TJ Thomas, and I've worked with him. He's helped me as a mentor, and I can only say what an amazing guy he is. I'm going to read his bio because it's very impressive and I don't want to miss anything. TJ Thomas loves teaching and helping others overcome their fear of selling. He's built three different million-dollar companies and has produced over $500 million in sales. He especially looks forward to working with coaches, entrepreneurs, consultants, and other service providers because his priority is serving those that love to serve and help others. And he's done it using a no-pressure process that he calls unselling. The truth is, you don't need to use high pressure to get your future clients to say yes. And TJ is going to be sharing with you today how you can do this. He lives in Sugarland in Texas with his wife of 23 years and two children, and he runs all of his businesses from home. As I say, I'm absolutely thrilled to have you on my show. I know you've helped me, and I know you're going to help lots of people who are listening. So just share a bit of your story. How have you got from where you started to, you know, $500 million is, you know, it's not a small sum, is it?
It's first off, I want to say, Gina, thank you so much for having me on the program. It's been a joy working with you, and I know that you, just like me, like to serve other people, and I'm so excited to be here. It is a lot large sum of money. If you told me when I first started my career that I would be doing where I'm at now and doing that type of volume, I would have laughed at you and said, there's just no way. So I've been in the sales industry for over 30 years now. And this is actually my 31st year. Started off very part-time, and I was always taught high pressure. I was taught, hey, you need to do it this way. You got to use techniques. You got to get people to say yes. And even though I learned it and I was good at it, I just did not make me feel good. So I said to myself, and again, I was at a full-time job at that time. I was teaching. I started out my life as an educator, and I did a lot of part-time sales. And I was actually making more money for my part-time than I was my full-time. I just loved working with kids and doing what I was doing. But that actually changed my life. Working with children is what actually changed my life, because I wasn't actually a teacher, as you would see, you know, in primary or secondary, people I would have one teacher for the whole day. I was actually a supplemental teacher that taught algebra, calculus, and, advanced math to elementary kids, you know, mostly fourth, fifth, and sixth graders. And it was really a self-esteem program. But the thing is, I was only allowed to teach using what was called Socratic method of teaching, Socratic pedagogy, right? Which means I couldn't make any statements. I only was only allowed to ask questions. So during that time, I was like, wait a second, how are these kids just going to learn without me making statements or lecturing like they traditionally do in school? And it was amazing. It was eye-opening. So all of these children were having discoveries. And the thing was, they were figuring out themselves. Yeah. They were selling themselves that they could do this, they can further themselves, and that changed my life in sales. So I just started looking at asking questions and getting people to start making self-realizations. And really, that is what we're here for, right? We don't want to force our product or service on other people. We want them literally to buy, not so, you know, you can make a commission or make a sale. It's so they are going to get some value from it and actually help them with their business or whatever they're looking for help for. So that literally changed my life. And then I went on, I started different companies, and the unselling system was something that I was always in a kind of a kind of a globulous state. And then I said, you know what, I have to get this down. So many people are asking me, what it is that I do and how I've made millions of dollars and created revenue streams for all these companies that I was working with. So that's what I did. I put it all together. I've got the Unselling System. And I used to work mostly with salespeople, which I do work with some now. But just like you said initially, my passion is helping other people, like to serve others. So even though salespeople are awesome, you know, the serving part wasn't always there. Sometimes it seemed like they were more focused just on getting a commission. And I wanted something deeper than that, something more. So I started working mostly with coaches and other consultative sellers, you know, consultants, service providers. And really all I do is we just take a look at what it is that they're, you know, what their core offer is. And I share with them how to get people to literally sell themselves. So instead of converting at 10 or 15%, if you use what I teach with Unselling, a lot of my students are converting at 50%, 60, and even higher, without getting objections, without getting complaints and refunds, and they have a high lifetime value. So yeah, it has been a journey for me, and I've enjoyed every step of it. There were some challenges in there as well, but I enjoyed it because it just made me strong, made me, you know, realize what I had was something special that I want to share with as many people as possible. And yeah, so that's kind of the short of it, is just I started pretty basic and then just was very consistent. And it really doesn't matter the dollar amount. I've sold, you know, from a few hundred dollars up to $150,000 over the phone. Goodness. And it's just based on getting, you know, really understanding what people are about, where they want to go, and making sure that you can take away their pain or lead them towards that pleasure by asking questions and getting them to self-discover.
And one of the things that made me realize that you were someone I wanted to work with is because there was such a huge emphasis on, it had to be a quality service. It had to be something that served the other person. It wasn't about trying to sell snow to Eskimos. It was really about having the integrity that you wanted very much to provide service and help and support in whatever format that may be for other people. And I just wonder what your view is in terms of, you know, there's so many people who resist selling or think that, particularly if you're in one of the holistic therapies, for example, that you shouldn't be charging. And I just wondered what your view was on that.
Yeah, so if you have, whether it's like, you know, like you said, like a healing type of coach, somebody's in fitness, you know, spirituality, mindset, the thing is, for us to be able to impact the market, right, our target market the way that we want to, we first have to get them on as clients, right? So it'd be great just to just give a lot of things away for free. And I'm not saying not to give things away for free. Like if you have a Facebook group, or if you have a PDF or some videos or content that you've done, it'll give people a general idea of what they need to do. But for people to really maximize, there's usually a paid component that you as a coach consultant should have. You should have that because they can get people to go to another level. So they may get to a certain level, but for them to go further, they're going to need to go deeper with you, right? It could be in a group setting, it could be one-on-one, right? It could be as part of a membership site, but they have to have a way to go deeper. So really the way I tell people is, if you truly want to serve your market, sometimes the surface level information you give is typically not deep enough for them to get there. Now, if they really focus on the self-starters and they go out and do everything that you say step by step, it is possible it can get done. But the reality is, because I've been doing this for a long time, that's not the way things work. Most people need to have a mentor, need to have a guide to show them, you know, the ropes, as they say. Yeah. I still remember struggling so much in my early entrepreneurial days, and I was trying to figure everything out on my own. But when I got a mentor, someone to actually help me, I went from literally being broke to making my first six figures. And after that, I made my first seven figures very shortly after, you know, very like less than 2 years after that. So, you know, guidance, mentorship is really important no matter what your market is. So, yeah, the one thing you said was sometimes people just don't feel like selling, you know, or they're kind of selling aversive, I sometimes say. And I tell everyone, everyone's a salesperson. You're all salespeople. It doesn't, no matter how much you want to realize it or not, you are a salesperson, right? Every time two people meet, there's some kind of sale typically going on, right? You're either going to sell them your way of thinking or your product or service, or they're going to sell you on their point of view, right? So there's usually a sale going on, but coaches, especially like lifestyle, health, you know, mindset, you know, spirituality, they don't typically like to sell. They don't like to sell, right? So I tell people the unselling was developed for that person. It was developed exactly for that, because unselling just means anti-high pressure and is basically a conversation that you have with somebody you totally care about. So it is important people focus on selling. It really is, because the only way that you can spread your message is to get clients.
Yeah.
To get clients, you have to sell, right? But you don't have to sell in a sleazy or slimy way. Most people I teach, I mean, everybody I teach to sell, that to align with their core values. So you can most definitely align with your core values and still sell and be happy. And then you can get to coaching or consulting, your true passion. But let's get them in on as a client first.
I think, you know, there's a lot that you say that resonates. And I know that when I first started working with you, that one of the things that really struck me was that you had said that it's relationships that sell. You know, people buy from people, and they've got to trust and like you and recognize that what you're offering is something that's going to be of real value to them. And that, for me, that felt right. That resonated. And I want to help people, and those who've listened to this show know that I have a mission to positively impact on 1 million people through the development of enlightened leadership. And what I recognized through working with you and you know, taking a step back, was to help more people, I needed to let people know that I could help them. And the only way to do that was through the process of marketing and selling. And ultimately, I'm selling who I am, but I'm also selling a resolution, if you like, for other people who want to be happier, to be more successful, to be more fulfilled. It just struck me that what you were offering was a platform for people to do that in a way that had huge integrity, which was very important to me.
Absolutely. I mean, I think integrity-based selling sometimes is a lost art when I hear the way people pitch. Because remember, I'm a consumer, you're a consumer.
Yeah.
We're all consumers. We go into the real world. We may get calls. And yeah, a lot of times the questions people ask typically is, you can see that there's an end game, right? There's some kind of, they're not asking me because they really care about it. They're just asking me because they want to get to the next part of their script, or they want to get to their sell. So what I tell people is, have integrity-based conversations. Truly, if you focus on helping people, like, detach yourself from the sale. Don't worry about them as a client.
Yeah.
Just focus on them. Now, here's the thing. You cannot just be a nice person and expect to make a lot of money or change people's lives. You just can't.
Yeah.
You can be a nice person and sell, if that makes sense, right? So, yeah. So a lot of times people think, okay, well, I'm just super nice and I'm friendly, and therefore I'm going to get a lot of customers or a lot of clients. And then they come to me and go, I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong. I mean, I've got good products. You know, I've got a membership site. You know, I really truly care about my, you know, clients and future clients, but I'm not getting anyone to join my program. What's going on? And I'll listen to their call, and then I just make a few minor tweaks, and all of a sudden they're getting people knocking down their door. And the main thing that I change is a couple of things. One is, you don't want to coach on strategy calls. If you're having a strategy call, a consulting call, you don't want to coach, because here's the thing. If you coach on that call, then why are they going to hire you? Right? There's no real reason to hire you, right? They'll say, well, okay, Gina, let me just test some of those theories out, and I'll get back with you.
Yeah.
So the first thing you don't want to do, you don't want to coach. But what you do want to do is, you want to have a conversation and listen, because your future client will tell you everything that you need to do so they can hire you as their coach or consultant, right? And the way that works is, you have a conversation as if it's your best friend or a family member. And if they come to you with a problem, you're asking questions about that problem. So a lot of times if your friend comes to you and goes, you know, Gina, I'm having a rough day. You're not going to go, oh, okay, well, let's talk about something else. You want to ask, so what exactly happened? How's it making you feel? How's it impacting your family? How's it impacting your health? You know, if things don't change right now, are you going to be able to make it over the next few days? What can I do to help? So those are the type of questions you would ask. But in the sales situation, the coaching, a lot of times people go away from that and they just follow a script. Now, I've got to think it's script. In fact, I have a software that helps people develop scripts. But I don't focus on the script that you read word for word. It's more of a guide. What you're doing is having a conversation. And what you're doing is you're finding out what is their problem and or what is the pleasure they're going to, right? But the key is you ask these questions so you can discover, but also they themselves can hear and discover themselves. Because a lot of times they don't know exactly what it is that they want. They don't. Most people don't. That's why they're coming to you, right? But to give them clarity, you know, sometimes people come to me, you know, and they want to be an entrepreneur and they'll say, well, I want to make, you know, $1 million a year. And then I ask them, what do you mean by that? No, I want to make $1 million. Well, why do you want to make $1 million? Well, I don't know. That's what everybody seems like they're saying. So I said, well, do you need to have $1 million? I don't know. And then I'd start going through what their needs are. And they may say, I only need to make $6,250 a month. Yeah. What's the difference between $1 million and $6,250? But then now if I get them to refocus on that, they can see themselves doing it. And then all my questions are based around that, right? So it's all about asking questions. And again, that person didn't know what they needed. Now they know because I asked some questions around that. So basically, whether it's spiritual, mindset, fitness, if you're a book author, coach, find out why they're there. So what prompted you to make this call, you know, or to set up this call?
Yeah.
You know, and then you want to find out what it is that they're missing or what are they're shooting for. And you listen, ask questions, listen, ask questions, and then you're finding out all of their hot buttons, right? What their needs, what their real true wants are. And then when you're closing, what you're doing is you just basically, you know, tie all that together. Now, I know we don't have a whole lot of time for me to go in depth, but I know that there's a special gift that I really haven't told you a whole lot about that I'm going to give for your listeners.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Going to help them add at least a zero to their bottom line. But it's going to give them a lot more depth on what I'm sharing with you right now as well.
Brilliant. A little more about the gift in just a few moments, but I really want to focus on, you've talked a lot about asking questions, and that started with your young people when you were teaching. But I think many people that I've come across are very good at asking the questions, but you've just made the point that you ask the questions, but then you really have to listen to the answers. And I think the skill of truly listening, not just to the surface of the answer, but, you know, what's underpinning that surface, and then asking another question that digs deeper. So you, as you say, you help them get clarity, but in helping them get clarity, you too can tell much more whether indeed you're the right person for them, because that's not always the case, or whether they're the right client for you. And if you're the right fit, huge amount of information in terms of how you can then move them forward, not necessarily in that call, but over time.
Absolutely. I mean, you hit the nail on the head right there, because I've had people that cry on the phone. I've had people that cry, and I'll ask what's wrong. You know, they're like, you know what? I've never been asked these questions before. Not even by my spouse. They don't ask these questions. And I've had people, so a lot of times people think that it's your product or service that people are buying. I've had people invest, you know, tens and tens of thousands of dollars on a service that I was selling. And after they bought it, they'd ask me, so wait a second, what did I just buy? You know, so because they were so in tune that I was going to help them. And I did, right? That's big. And I'm not going to sell anything I don't believe in. So it was really clear to them that, you know, that, man, whatever TG is talking about, he is super listening. So the point you made about listening is key. And if we don't talk about anything else, this is the one, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because most people don't listen. Most people just don't. And I've listened to, oh my goodness, probably over 1,000 calls. I've listened to tons of calls. And most people, when there are two people are talking, 45%, they've done, you know, surveys, and I'm sorry, studies on this. So 45% of the time when two people are talking, the other person who's being talked to may have heard something. They go, oh my gosh, I just heard what Gina said. and they start thinking about how to respond to you. Another 45% of the time, they're thinking of when they can butt in to the conversation and interrupt you, which means 90% of the time, people aren't listening. And that inherently is a big problem in sales. See, when people don't listen, what they do is then they start projecting their offer and they're not truly listening. So the offer is not aligned with the wants, desires, goals, and needs that the future client has. And because of that, that's why people say no. So when you start aligning those things, like, you know, my wife and I, a few years ago, when we bought her a car, we told the salesperson exactly what we're looking for. Our concern was safety, security for the family. That was it. We basically told him what was the main thing, what that was important. And he spent no time talking about that. He ended up talking about cup holders and luxury and the room in the back, which is okay to weave those things in, but he didn't focus. So literally we were tuned out pretty much the whole sales pitch. So look at what you're doing. In fact, I tell people to record themselves and you'll be shocked at how many times you cut people off, how you heard them say something, then you go on to something else. So I tell people, just truly listen. You know, don't worry about what your end game. And you'll eventually get to where you're doing these strategy calls in about 30 to 45 minutes. But your first few may be over an hour, which is okay because you're learning, right? But eventually you'll get it narrow down. And then you're going to find out in a 45-minute call, wow, for every 5 calls I'm having, I'm converting 3 of them. Yes. That's a big difference than converting 0 or 1 out of every 5, right? So, yeah, listening is crucial, absolutely crucial. But if your students, if your listeners, subscribers do that, you'd like
to. I have a view, though, that I think one of the reasons why you're so successful when you listen is so few people feel listened to in life. So when somebody truly hones in and is interested, and it has to come for me from the heart, it's no good just pretending, but being truly interested in that person and what you can do for them, that person feels validated in a way that very often they don't feel in life. And I think that that's something that's very precious. And we all need to learn to listen more, whether we're selling or not. You know, I say to my students, you've got 2 ears and 1 mouth for a very good reason. It should be that way around. But, you know, tell me, who's your ideal client?
So my ideal client, so I typically have focused working with coaches now, mostly coaches. If you're talking about me specifically, my ideal client are coaches that are making typically between $3,000 and $10,000 a month, and they kind of plateaued. Where they just can't seem to know how to scale. They may be doing organic or paid, really doesn't matter, as long as it's not cold calling. So all the things I'm teaching now is not really with cold calling, right? I used to cold call years ago, and I'll tell you right now, that's not the way to go. With what people can learn about with sales funnels and marketing processes, I don't really think you have to cold call. But what I'm teaching you right now works the best if you have inbound leads coming in. So I'm able to help people scale. That's what I do. So usually $3,000 to $10,000, and they plateaued. A coach, and typically, in like you said, the wellness market, health, Reiki healing, and that's another big one. Now there's a lot of these, you know, mindset, spiritual type of coaches that are wanting to help people, but they have a hard time figuring out a way to set up their selling process. That's my ideal client. But I do have other clients. I have people that are book authors, digital marketers, entrepreneurs. As long as so I don't typically work with new people that have never gotten a sale before, right? Usually when they've gotten some sales. But the question you asked is great, because it is important for your market to dial down exactly who it is that they work with as well. So you can get some outliers around that, but it's always best to focus on one specific market and help them out. But yeah, that's the joy. I love doing what I do, because sometimes people come to me and goes, oh my gosh, I don't think I can do this. I just can't. And then at the end of it, my training, they're like, oh my gosh, I never thought I would be able to do this. So it's a real step-by-step process. Very natural. That's right. It's so natural and aligns with what most people, what their values are. So it's nothing against your values. And you, like you said, it's going to teach you life lessons. It is great to listen to people. It's not good to cut people off consistently. It's good to listen to what they have to say. And many times, if you just listen, you don't sometimes have to do any selling. They'll just sell themselves, right? Yeah. So that's very, very crucial. Absolutely.
Brilliant. So tell us about this free gift that you have for us.
So what I've done is I know a lot of times people can get like PDFs or videos and things like that. I have a course that you're familiar with, but I have pieces of that course that I actually sell as standalone courses because they're just that powerful. And I know you've already gone through this, but I've got a series that I call Deep Dive Audios that I sell alone. The retail value is $9.97 is what I sell it for. Usually when I've sold it on specials, anywhere from $2.97 to $4.97. But because I know you and you're awesome, I wanted to get that for your audience. So I know I've given you a link for it. I did forget one thing. And I forgot to tell you this as well. When people go to get this gift, it'll take you to an actual order form because it's like I said, it's a real purchase that they can make. They have to put in the promo code POWER. So it's got to be POWER. It's somewhere near the top. It'll say put in the promo code. Once they put it in, it'll zero everything out. There's nothing to buy, no upsells, nothing else. This is truly a gift that I want to help people with. But if people listen to this and implement what I teach, I've got some extra bonuses within the bonus that are PDFs that show people how to deal with objections and just get people to say yes consistently in a very ethical way. So I don't know if you want to share the link now, but I've given everything set up for your tribe. All they've got to do.
Thank you. So we'll put that link into the show notes.
Okay.
So everybody can find that. Thank you very much. But you if bet. You're listening to this, remember to put the word POWER in as your promo code, and then you'll get that for free. I'd like to say a huge thank you for your time and for your generosity with the gift. I know I found this very helpful. I found it incredibly helpful working with you. And I'm sure there are lots of people out there, particularly after the crisis that came earlier in the year, many people are setting themselves up as entrepreneurs and have taken the opportunity to do something different. And are in that business where they're now wanting to increase their capacity with clients and selling their products. So I think it's come at a really good time. So thank you very, very much for joining us, and thank you so much for your gift.
You're very, very welcome.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break now, and we'll see you after the break for the next Genuine Chat. But don't go away. See you soon. Thanks very much.
If you're a businesswoman who is overwhelmed or suffering from imposter syndrome, who is tired of having one disastrous relationship after another, or who finds it hard just to say no, well, it's time to take care of you. You get the best out of life by contacting Gina Gardner, relationship coach and best-selling author and motivational speaker. Just visit genuinely-you.com. Or you can email Gina directly at gina@genuinely-you.com. Take action now. Start to thrive rather than simply survive. Imagine being a highly successful, enlightened leader who is in complete alignment with your best self, who makes a positive difference on a daily basis. Let me introduce Gina Gardner, an expert in developing transformational leadership with over 30 years of experience. Gina has developed a unique and unrivaled approach to help you step into your genuine power to become an enlightened leader. And when you do, amazing things happen. Go to enlightenedleadership.co or email Gina at gina at genuinely-you.com.
Hi, and welcome back. As normal in my show, we're going to be doing a genuine chat, and I'd like to introduce Rachel Davidson to you.
Hi there.
Who is my good friend and assistant, an amazing novelist. So we'll talk about that in a bit later. And I'm Gina Gardner, as you know, and we are going to talk about justice this morning. Mm. And it's an interesting topic because many people feel that justice should be done. Mm-hmm. But will have a very different view of what that justice should be, mm-hmm. according to their circumstances and their belief system. Mm-hmm. And thought it would be interesting to explore the whole business of justice, because we have a law system, and for those of you that are in the UK, there'll be similarities, but some differences between the UK and, for example, the US. Mm-hmm. But there's also the feeling of, you know, do you feel you have had justice? Within a family context, within an organisation context. And interestingly, I was talking to a young man last night who felt as if he had been in a situation where there was a great sense of injustice, mm-hmm. because he felt he'd been treated unfairly. So we have justice in the sort of general day-to-day sense, and then we have justice in terms of the legal and criminal sense. Mm. And so we're just going to spend the next 20 minutes looking at that, and I'd like you to think about it for yourself. When do you feel that there has been justice done, and when in your life have you felt that actually there was injustice? And interestingly, that many people who go through the courts to get justice because they feel they've been aggrieved or there's been a crime against them feel that justice has not been served, either because the person who they feel has done the hurting of them has been got off on a technicality, or because their lawyer happens to be more skilled than yours, or because the courts then have not given out a sentence that you feel is appropriate to the crime. But justice, that sense of injustice, often it is true of us when we're children. You know, one of my earliest memories is being, in those days, teachers could smack. Mm-hmm. And I must have been about four. Mm-hmm. And I was smacked because I threw the beanbag early. But it wasn't me.
Oh.
And I can remember that huge sense of injustice, because it wasn't me. And I wasn't allowed to put my point of view, mm-hmm. that the teacher had made an assumption.
Yeah.
And I'd got the punishment.
Yeah. So the words that probably went through your head is, that's not fair. So this concept of fairness is at the heart of the sense of justice, isn't it? And it's fairly true that we all come on into this world with actually an innate sense of what is fair and what isn't.
Absolutely.
And the lawyers have a particular phrase that's sort of used as a bit of a rule of thumb for how sensible a legislation is when they talk about the common man on the Clapham bus. Yeah, there's just would this be reasonable to the common man on the Clapham bus?
Yes.
They have that particular sort of, I won't call it a benchmark because it's just a feel. I will say that having had many years of experience in and around the civil side of the legal system, that if you approach that whole system thinking that it is going to mete out justice, then you are wrong, generally speaking.
Yeah.
That when you get to the point of invoking legal systems, which I will, to my dying day, support the need for, because they are part of a civil, free society, and the legal system must be separate from, as much as it ever can be, and it takes rigour to keep it separate, must be separate from the political system, the governing regimes. But there is very little actual justice once you get into a legal system. When you're having this I will say is the civil rather than possibly the criminal, which happily I've not had much experience of, but civil side of things, you're basically arguing, and it's he said, she said going on. And the process that you're taken through is one of paperwork and admin. And a lot of the time you are just down to sort of the mood of the judge on the day. Yes. So justice can sometimes fall your way and justice sometimes cannot. For instance, one of the companies I worked for definitely unfairly dismissed me, and my solicitor sort of, you know, over a course of meetings nodded and said, yes, you've definitely got a case. The question is, if you take it to tribunal, whether the judge will basically say, agree, yes, you've got a case, and then award you more than what you're basically being paid off with by the company now.
Yes.
So that's just one example of how, you know, you think that the law system is set up to protect you, and the reality is, no, it's not. It's there for you to, if you have the deep pockets and the aptitude to do it, and you're prepared to apply yourself to it, yeah, then you might just win an argument. But in and of itself, the system will not be just. No. It's just because somebody says, oh my God, they have outright unfairly, yes, acted towards you, and everybody can see it, and you know, but the reality is that you might not come off better for it, for having, you know, taken the sword of, yes, justice and all the torch of justice and try to win your case.
Let's move it into a family situation, because I think so often issues arise with children in terms of how parents deal with them, mm-hmm, which will often have a far-reaching effect on that child's sense of self, mm-hmm, and particularly on the relationship that those siblings have one with another. Mm. And there's often, you know, I work with clients who have, let's put it this way, they've long since left childhood, mm-hmm, and they are still aggrieved about the way in which they've been treated by their parents, because they deem that unfair. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate it from the parent, and this works with teachers too, how very often you're trying to sort out a situation that you haven't seen, mm, that one child will be very upset or is younger, and the other child may be bigger. Mm-hmm. And there is a tendency to say, you're old enough to know better, huh, when the younger child has really been winding that child, mm, up, and then stands back and is quite satisfied with the result. Mm. Or you're bigger, physically bigger, and so that child is expected to be more mature than they are emotionally, mm, and behaviourally, because they are physically big.
Yeah.
And of course, this comes in the context, and if you're a parent, you'll know this very well, that, you know, that your children will be arguing, there'll be something going on, and you'll be trying to get on with something else, perhaps not in the same room, and they will come to you and ask you to mete out justice. Huh. And the chances are that whatever you do, one of them, or if there are more than two, more of them, will consider that they have not been treated justly. And part of that is because we all see things from our own perspective, mm-hmm, and rarely, particularly with children, do they put themselves into the other person's shoes. Mm. And the dynamics within a family are often very complicated. So your position in the family, the oldest child is often expected to be the one to be more mature, mm-hmm, and maturity is nothing to do with age, really. You know, people, I've known people who at seven show more maturity than many people I've known who have been in their 40s, 50s, 60s and 70s. Mm. So much of it is their intrinsic personality, mm, and then of course life experiences. Mm. But if you're in the family situation and you're a parent who is trying to sort out a situation, particularly if it's a pattern of behaviour, then it can be quite difficult to deal with that in a way that feels as if justice has been served. And, you know, getting those children to recognise that each of them have played a part is difficult. Now, if you put that into the work context, that very often is just a bigger version of the family context, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you would hope that the work context would have a bit more distance from emotions.
Yes.
In the sense that people understand, you know, boundaries and professionalism, in the sense of what is a good way of behaving in order to achieve a certain result versus a bad way. And yes, families often don't bother to stick to those rules.
But there are many companies where the culture is that in written form, in the handbook, there are very clearly defined codes of conduct and ways of behaving, but they're not always met.
No, but if you go out into the world expecting that...
That's a different thing, isn't it?
Well, I mean, my daughter was moaning the other day about something that's very unjust in the sense of the education system and what she's being required to do, and it is unfair. And she's bemoaning the fact that she's not being told the truth about something, a truth that, frankly, if actually admitted in the open way she wishes it to be done, would probably result in somebody losing their job. And I had to say to her, I totally feel for you, but why are you expecting somebody to tell you the truth in this situation? Why do you expect it to be fair? The whole, you know, look at the whole system. Look at what actually the individuals in that system are fearful of losing. So if you go into the world expecting justice and fairness, you're probably going to end up being quite disappointed most of the time, because A, fairness and justice is subjective.
Yes.
It's down to what your values say and what your opinion is. And the likelihood is that you're probably not dealing with people who are willing to risk themselves for something that might benefit you.
That's true. But if you take that as your starting point, I think the difficulty with that is that if you distrust people because you think they're not going to be fair, they're not going to serve justice, and that's your starting point, then it can then create a huge issue in terms of how you create and develop relationships over time.
Yeah, if that's your starting point. But I think if you wait long enough, most people will demonstrate that to you.
I think that makes
sense. And if they don't, hurrah! We don't need to be having this conversation. But, you know, we're talking about a sense. The only people only start quoting about justice when they feel a sense of injustice.
I think that's very true.
Yeah? And people don't talk about justice in the sense of, I wasn't just then. It's always I have had an injustice done to me, they are unjust, yeah? No, nobody tends to sort of, you know, my daughter's not going to come and sit in the car and talk about how she failed and she should have done this and she should have done that, yeah?
And that's one of the reasons that we talk about radical responsibility, because in every situation, there you have some responsibility. And in fact, going back to the young man I was talking to yesterday, the problem had been going on for 11 months. Mm. And so my question to him was, why have you left it so long? Mm. And all sorts of quite reasonable things came out. I didn't want to appear weak. I didn't want to be difficult. It was a new job. I wanted to be seen to be doing well. Mm. And he became more and more ground down by the situation. Mm, yeah. So it then gets to the point where people find it very difficult to talk about, because they have left it to the point where it then starts to look as if it's sour grapes. It looks as if you're trying to justify that you haven't succeeded in the way that the other person wants you to.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of internal processing going on there that is, sorry to be blunt, but frankly, storytelling. Because he's concerned about this.
Absolutely.
I might look like this and I might come over as that and so on and so forth. And that's entirely human, because we all do that.
I've got to say, so the storytelling is one of the biggest challenges, I think, in terms of you feeling happy, in terms of you being successful and, you know, operating well in life, that the more stories you tell yourself where you're in victim mode, the more difficult it is for you to step into your power and actually take action.
See, I think that's the paradox of justice.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, I know you say, oh, you can't you can't stand in mistrust of everybody, otherwise you live. But on the other hand, if you have learned lessons whereby you understand that, you know, you're not looking for somebody else to save you in some sense, yes, you're not... Mm-hmm. expecting good behavior from that person without any demonstration that they're capable of it. If you are actually a little bit reserved in who you trust, you are more likely to get justice in life. You are more likely to not suffer injustice, I'll put it like that. So there is that paradox. Yeah. It's good to trust and it's good to be open. It's good to, you know, understand that people have their own issues and, you know, forgive them and give. But on the other hand, if you're true that way, I mean, 11 months is a long time to sit and suffer and then expect justice. Whereas if he had expected justice, as in had an innate request in, within his heart to say, no, I deserve more. This feels wrong. I am going to do something.
Yeah.
Then, you know, arguably, possibly, who knows, in a different universe with a parallel life, maybe he wouldn't 11 months later be seeking justice. So I think justice is something that people come to when they haven't stood firm enough in themselves in the moment. And again, that's not easy to do, to have the wherewithal, because we are brought up to be polite. We are brought up to you know, give people the options and definitely in the British culture, you know, we don't get angry straight away. Most British people tend to put a stick up a lip on and sort of get angry internally. Passive aggressiveness is more towards our nature. So, you know, but I do think that if you are capable of standing firm in the moment and meeting out your own justice, so to speak, yeah, by demonstrating that boundaries will not be crossed and you can't actually get away with treating me like that, then the subject of justice very rarely comes into your life.
I think I'd like to unpack what you've said, because there's a lot in there. And I would say that if you've got a good sense of self-worth, that's where it starts. Rather than the not trusting other people outside, it's about trusting yourself inside and having that sense, that inner sense of how I treat myself. I treat myself with respect and I expect other people to do the same.
So this is not an easy thing. I mean,
no,
I've got a good example that happened fairly recently where a working relationship suddenly turned very sour with an email sent to me with basically, you know, accusations implied, nothing overtly implicit, but definitely implied. And in the moment when I read that email, I felt the badness of it. I felt the injustice of it. You know, I wasn't being treated fairly or even arguably with respect. Now, I went around exactly the same cycle that everybody would in that sense of, oh, God, you know, is it me? Did I do something wrong?
I think it's important that you do review.
I don't think you can't not, you know.
Well, there are some
who apparently appear to just react like that. But I don't know. I think they always have the internal conversation. They're perhaps just a little bit more bullish in life. But I definitely went around so this is what I've got to put up with. So I've got to kowtow and be subservient and behave in this rather derogatory manner, you know, basically reduce myself in order to what? In order to fit in. You know. And I totally accept that it was only because I had backup in the moment that I was able to stand firm and say, that didn't feel right. I'm not putting up with it. If you can't see how you made me feel and how you also need to change, then this is over. This is done with. And indeed it was, because the other party could not see it.
No.
And indeed claimed, as most bullies do, that everybody would think the way he did.
I think there's a lot there in the very often in these relationships that somebody has a position, I'm not suggesting necessarily in your situation, but has a position of status, which then puts that other person on the back foot already, because that other person has the power that status brings.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely part of it. Yeah.
But inevitably, how you feel about yourself is going to make a huge difference in terms of how you deal with all of these things. And so I think having a really good sense of self and valuing yourself, that's not about I'm better than anybody else, but that I should be treated in a respectful and honourable way. And if I'm not, then I feel confident enough to say that's not good enough, you've crossed the line.
Yeah, because there are very few scenarios in life, modern life, that are actually real. I mean, you know, you have agency as a person on this planet.
Yes.
And nobody has status above you. at that fundamental level.
No.
And then we come into structures which say, I have a title that is more important than yours, or I have more money in the bank. Yeah, these are not real structures. They are humanly created.
But they're as real as we allow them to be.
Yeah, and they are real in the sense that, you know, yes, that has a point, and yes, we do value people who have more money in the bank than people who don't, and that gives them a status. And yes, there is a biological status of exhibited by lobsters and the animal kingdom the world over, that of territory and status, therefore, yes, that is there. But ultimately, when it boils down to it, you have just the amount of the same agency as the person who is giving you the injustice. That's the self-worth you have to come to.
But it only works when you recognise that you can step into your power.
Yeah.
And that power is not about diminishing other people. And what we see a lot of, I think, at the moment is, I'm more powerful than you, that makes you lesser. And I think it's time for people to recognise that you have that value just being you. Mm. And if you step into your own power, you are far less likely to be on the receiving end of somebody else meeting out injustice because they are in not their genuine power, but in their ego power. And you can see lots and lots of examples at every strata of society of people who are at the moment wielding that ego power. And the only way I think that we are going to make a fundamental difference is when each person steps into their genuine power and really recognises their worth. And that takes work. And I think a lot of people at the moment are unconscious of the fact that they have that power and how to get there. And that's one of the reasons why we've set up Genuinely You, and one of the reasons why we do these genuine chats, is to really give you an opportunity to think. We haven't got all the answers because ultimately your circumstance is going to be different. But you can always contact me through Genuinely Gina. So it's gina@genuinely-you.com. You can raise questions and we'll be very happy to explore those. But if you're at the moment sitting with that sense that life is unjust, that you are a victim to circumstances, I would urge you to really think about the fact that you are a powerful being when you choose to step into that power and to take dominion over yourself, not other people, but over yourself, and to recognize that ultimately how you operate in the world is going to be how other people will treat you. If you expect to be treated as a victim, make no mistake that there are people around who will treat you as a victim. But when you stand into your genuine power, you have got much more opportunity to set the boundaries and to keep them. Now, lots of information on the website, genuinely-you.com. If you're interested in leadership, then enlightenedleadership.co. You can find Rachel's books, which there's a trilogy of spiritual novels called...
It's the Beyond Veil series, and there's three books in that. So look it up on Amazon, Beyond Veils.
And I can tell you that they're great books, really worth reading. You'll find all of my books on Amazon. You'll find lots on YouTube. It's Genuinely You with Gina Gardner. Love it if you could subscribe, leave a comment. I'm on LinkedIn, Tumblr, and Facebook. And we'll look forward to seeing you the next time. Take care now. Bye-bye.